Welcome to another exciting episode of the NIDS View, a weekly show of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, where we are advancing peace, promoting stability, and helping you to think deterrence. Each week, we will discuss and analyze a recent topic and provide insight to how it affects our national deterrence. The view of the hosts and guests are their own. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back to another great episode of the NIDS View. Welcome to 2025. It is great to be around for another year. And if you're Jim Petrosky, every year you're still alive is a great year at his age. So I'm sure you and the gerontologist are both happy you made it to this year. So,
you know, it's not the gerontologist or just, I know why you bring this up, Adam. I went to the doctor today and they were just trying to figure out when to pull the stem cells from my brain to try to populate them into society and make people smarter. Okay. And we're just not sure when the date will be when they pull them out and start distributing them in the U.S.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess we need more engineers, so we'll maybe support that effort. But it's great to be back. Great to be here for another year. It's great to have you, the listeners, here. Of course, you know, the NIDS View is a podcast of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, and this is our roundtable discussion of events and, you know, current news, and we generally discuss articles, and in keeping with that, there were, you know, a couple of articles that came out recently, and they're kind of nice to juxtapose against each other. And one of them, Keith Payne wrote a really nice piece called America First, Neither Cosmopolitan Nor Isolationist. And in that article, he sort of dispels the myths and he gives a handful of examples of, you know, of journalists and others, academics at conferences who willfully misrepresent what, you know, Donald Trump's positions are on issues and what does America First mean. And then he very nicely sort of lays out what that actually means. And I want to sort of read a quote that nicely summarizes his argument. And he says, Trump voters consider sovereign borders and national identity as foundational to proper U.S. governance and spending. They do not see themselves first as, quote, global citizens with a priority obligation to some concept of a global community. They do not have an associated, mild, or sharp disdain for American patriotism, borders, power, and sovereignty. They do not favor Washington spending their tax dollars to advance a globalist agenda and institutions at the expense of American jobs, security, and prosperity. When trade-offs must be made, they do not support the U.S. government sacrificing their well-being to advanced globalist ideals, institutions, or celebres. Particularly galling to these voters were the recent images of Biden handing out $1 billion in Angola while some citizens in North Carolina were still living in tents and NGO-provided campers following the October hurricane. And so this is sort of, this is the argument that Keith makes. And then to sort of juxtapose it, on the other side is an article by Hal Brands. Trump's worldview isn't as unpredictable as you think. And of course, his argument is, you know, that, you know, it's sort of the standard Trump derangement syndrome argument that Trump is destabilizing, and then it could go, you know, he could be benign because people ignore what he wants and he doesn't have much effect. We could be really, really awful. But the point is, he's bad no matter what. And he says, Trump isn't as unpredictable. Trump isn't as unpredictable as many analysts think. His basic views are transactionalism is good. America's trade agreements and alliances are lousy bargains. Democratic values and human rights are overrated. Throughout the recent election campaign, he telegraphed his intention to raise tariffs, push for peace in Ukraine, and squeeze allies on defense spending. But reading Trump is still a challenge. And he makes what is essentially an argument about just how bad could it be. And he offers three scenarios of how bad this next Trump administration could be. And, it's kind of interesting because in many respects, it's very much sort of what Keith Payne is arguing against. And I know for you guys, this was a, kind of interesting and infuriating reads. And for you, Curtis, I was sort of curious as you sort of read these articles side by side, how did you look at them and what was your take on the arguments made by Payne and Brands?
Well, thank you, Adam, and I just want to, and Jim, and Happy New Year, and Happy New Year to our listeners. I am probably still mulling what my New Year's resolutions will be. We are, 2.5 weeks out from inauguration. It's an interesting conversation to be having here at this time. And I was interested in these two pieces, and I'm glad we were able to talk about them today. And just again, to remind our listeners, if you don't know who Dr. Keith Payne is, he is probably one of our nation's leading thinkers in deterrence. Runs a great institution called the National Institute for Public Policy. It's affiliated with Missouri State University and other areas. And Dr. Hal Brands is with he's probably one of our nation's preeminent grand strategy thinkers and academics, Johns Hopkins University. And so these two are really intellectual leaders in their field. I don't always agree with Dr. Brands, but it's always an interesting case. This article, though, for Dr. Brands, I think, was a little bit more challenging, and I think it was a little more personal for him. Maybe it was cathartic. Perhaps the election didn't go the way he had hoped it would. But I'm amazed when I read these pieces from folks who sort of most of their articles are just conjecture of what Trump might do and how bad it might turn out. And we really don't know. And when we think about the situations that we're stepping into here in 2025, the closest thing we can do is sort of reflect backwards and say, well, if you really are afraid of what soon-to-be President Trump will bring to the world, let's look backwards and see what President Biden brought to the world. And I would argue it's not really that great in all of the argument places, if you will, topics that Dr. Brands brings up in his piece. He connotes issues with you mentioned in your quote there about, hey, we're going to harass allies to pay more. Well, yes. Europe is on fire. It is at war. And there are still 25% of NATO who are still having a challenge meeting their 2% promise that they made in 2006. We have, by the way, a same issue that President Biden was fighting with NATO, that President Trump was fighting with NATO back in his first term, and that President Obama initially started during his term, and in fact, he coined the term free riders. So I think that we have to put these things in perspective. There are a lot of boogeymen that I think that Dr. Brands really sort of pushes out here in this piece, that it's as if he has completely forgotten about what has happened in the previous decade, much less the previous 4 years.
Well, you mentioned something, Curtis, on this abandoning allies thing. And that is, and this is one point that Keith makes is, hey, by the way, per capita, NATO member states in Europe spend about $670 per year on defense. That's $670 per capita per year. Americans per capita per year spend about $2,400. That's more than three times as much on defense. And so this idea that that it is right and moral to chastise Donald Trump for saying, yes, you have war on your door, i.e. in Ukraine, mm-hmm. that, and you should step up. and you should do a better job of funding your own defense, that he's somehow an isolationist and he's going to destroy these long held alliances. I mean, I wonder, like, at what point, is there any sort of bad behavior that maybe we as Americans have come to a point in which there's, you know, we always feel bad for the people who act badly. Yeah. And we excuse away their bad behavior. And when does that stop?
Right. Well, let me add to the context of that, and then we'll hand it over to Jim, who I'm sure is chomping at the bit. In that 300% greater payment that Americans are making in this in our GDP per capita, it is also into account that the combined economies of NATO, to include Canada, are equal to about the U.S. So this isn't some sort of ratio where someone would say, well, we may be paying 300% more, but they make 300% less. Well, that's not the case. You can argue that some of our 300% increase also covers down on the Indo-Pacific and all of the other places that we want to be, that interventionists want to place us. But nonetheless, as we're comparing apples and apples, that's where those numbers are.
And that's a historic low, by the way.
It is.
For Americans. Jim, what was your take?
Well, as I sit here on the side, I think historically of a certain presidential campaign where someone said, what am I, just a potted plant? I'm here on the side, but and I appreciate our listeners listening to the first part of this. So I always take a very centrist view on anything I read regarding politics, especially, and political leanings, because people tend to go on extremes in all directions. And so, you know, there's nuggets of truth in each piece of this, whether I agree fully or disagree fully. I'll even say I disagree with myself sometimes when I realize that the facts are different.
How does that happen?
Yeah, well, you'd be surprised how that happens.
Self, I disagree with you.
Yeah, well, you know, I stood for this thing, but, you know, when I was 18, but now that I'm, you know, 60 and looking back, I was a dumb idea, and I can mention a lot of them.
All right, that's fair.
So I can disagree with myself. However, there's a couple of things I want to point out in this article. And the first piece is that, you know, when you look at, I look at it from a deterrent standpoint, like, what do these articles have to do with deterrence? And there's a lot here mm-hmm. that you can pull out. One is that every country survives by looking at its own self-interest. If it doesn't have its own self-interest, then you're not a country. You're someone else's self-interest, someone else's interest to yourself, whatever it would be. Anyway, they're your interest. So you have to have a self-interest based upon, you know, some structure. Every country has that. Adam, you know, you've studied these historical structures of various many different dynasties, etc. Everyone has a view, a worldview, and they need to structure it. We as a country, you know, being, you know, what's laid out here is MAGA, or, you know, country self-interest. That self-interest is here, whether we have a Donald Trump or whether we have a Joe Biden. There's an interest in power in your country and an interest in the country. Now, how you affect that, that's a different story. How you approach that self-interest, whether you place that on yourself or whether you place it on the workers or whether you place it elsewhere, is very different. And we've seen what the Trump administration had done before in putting, you know, a U.S. interest forward. And that's not unsurprising. There's nothing. I mean, you would have had to stick your head to bag for the last 8 years because you had to ignore it during the Trump administration and then listen to everything that's been said about the Biden administration for the last 8 years in order to not know where this is heading, at least predict it. We'll see what happens. And everyone makes predictions. I always love predictions because the only predictions that hold are, you know, after it happened and you go back and go, oh, yeah, we were right, or yeah, we were wrong. So, but going back to the deterrence side, when we put our self-interest first, then we have a country that's interested and gets behind you because it's all of our self-interest. And that's what's important about forming a collective country that will work together. And if you go back to any war and look at what wins is when people are behind you, when you work collectively together. You go all the way back into just about every war. Now, second piece here is some of these dire predictions. that are stated in this this article by Hal Brand. And I am trying to pick out. I had some, so maybe you'll have to come back to me. Picked out a couple of things. I said, you know, they are interesting. And in fact, here some contradictory statements being made. That could be good or bad. And Hal talks about how some of these views are contradictory and they may get the ire of other countries. Well, that's an interesting thing to note. We should note that, and we should watch how the administration unfolds, and we should ensure that we don't cause other countries to accidentally start a war with us. As we've talked about in deterrence, you've got to communicate well enough so you don't start a war, but you don't cause a war. Both occur. And if that makes sense to our audience, I think it should make sense to my deterrence folks here. So those are my overview. Again, I'm not as much into this the political side of this as I am into what does it do for deterrence. And what I see is you've got to be aware of what's happening. You can't just simply say, I agree with everything. I'm going to follow you wholeheartedly. Because when that happens, bad things can happen because you'll miss good things. Back to you.
I tell you though, I'm not going to lie.
I lectured to you, Adam, didn't I?
I was sort of galled when Brand says, and I quote, "The man who tried to overturn an election has scant regard for democratic values." Yeah. And the irony is, Donald Trump was democratically elected. He was the Republican nominee, and he actually won primaries. Yet Hal Brands was funding the very candidate who never won a single primary, but was crowned the Democrat nominee instead of being the victor in primaries. So I sort of find it hypocritical that he would have the audacity to call Donald Trump an enemy of democracy when his own candidate was never democratically nominated to represent her party. So,
these are all political comments.
War is the continuation of politics by other means.
I agree, but these are political statements, not politics in general. To say, go down, whatever the statement was that President Trump said, I can't remember verbatim, go down and peacefully protest. You know, that statement taken out of context, you can twist that around anywhere you want. But that doesn't tell me really anything about where people are. What it tells me is people are taking sides. I'm going to take this side. I'm going to take that side. I'm going to cover my eyes, which I don't ever want to do. I don't want to cover my eyes to anyone I'm following. I want to make sure I can evaluate who they are and what they're doing. And I won't cover my eyes to people I'm not following because their ideas or interests may have some value to keep me in check. That's the value of looking at both sides. I'm very much a two-side kind of a person.
Well, let me add to this. Dr. Brands, we flummoxed. Hal Brands's memory is a bit scant here as we look through this because, he notes in here that America and China are locked in a Cold War. Well, not according to the Biden administration. They're very careful that they don't want to call this a Cold War. Perhaps President Trump will. Who knows? He notes that Trump will even compel Hamas to keep peace and free its hostages by promising, quote, hell to pay if it does not, as if this is some pejorative. That's a deterrent message Donald Trump has been very comfortable making. And I would argue much more effective than President Biden's deterrence message, which was one word, don't. They did.
Look at Russian aggression. When does it happen and when doesn't it happen?
Sure.
It happened prior to Donald Trump and it happened after Donald Trump, but it didn't happen during Donald Trump. That's because people think like, Ronald Reagan, they thought Ronnie just might do it. He just might be crazy enough to do it. And so they thought the same thing about Donald Trump, which was very effective.
No, I don't disagree with that effectiveness. It's these other little red herrings. It's sort of like when a disarmament people say, well, that's Cold War thinking. And my answer always is the same. We didn't have any nuclear wars during Cold War. I think it was pretty good thinking. You know, so you can't, so people will use these things as bludgeons, and I don't want to focus on the bludgeon. I want to look at the effect, and you're exactly right, Adam. The effect of having a clean, severe message calculated to bring people, you know, to cause people to not take an action is good. I'm and just that, saying that, that well, some of this other bluster just well, again, gets in the way.
Some of this bluster, when we talk about politics in the sense of policy, it does have a deterrent role here. Dr. Brands notes that in Trump's first term pressure campaigns didn't deliver either North Korean denuclearization or diplomatic cave-in by Iran. He seems to forget that the whole world was gripped by COVID, which shut everything down, and that, oh, by the way, during this time of rapprochement with North Korea, there was no ballistic missile testing for about 18 months. So there was notable change in being able to begin the, for lack of a better term, the courting process with Kim Jong-un. Anytime you can talk to somebody and try to find some sort of common ground in a transactional relationship, that's a good thing. I find that when we do transactional relationships diplomatically from one sovereign nation to another sovereign nation in a mutual sense of respect, you tend to have a better outcome. When you don't do transactional relationships, you end up with Ukraine. And mm-hmm. other issues that sort of drag on, that have no definition of an end, that have no definition of this or that. And for the issue about the democracy question, Adam, I'll add to you that we have been supporting Ukraine and President Zelensky, who canceled his election cycle in the middle of this war, while both the United States and Russia conducted elections.
That's right.
All in the name of democracy. With regard to Ukraine. So we have to be careful to understand the differences between democracy and democratic institutions, which tend to not always be the same thing, as we're finding out now. And this is the whole idea when we think about populism and the topic that Dr. Payne talks about with how America First populism is viewed, and is viewed as non-interventionism. And this is the challenge here. But he brings in the point that it does not mean isolationism. And he points out to the recent Reagan library poll that came out.
Here, Curtis. This was what I was going to jump on, because I agree with you. It shows you the result of that. But go ahead, exactly. Read it to our
So, I mean, they polled Republican voters. Well, who do you think Republican voters are today? 90% of them are Trump voters. And they all voted, a large majority of Trump voters believe that the United States should be more engaged in the world and take a lead on the world stage. The supermajority of Americans want the United States to spend more on national defense. The large majority wants the U.S. to be prepared to win two foreign wars simultaneously. A majority wants to continue sending weapons to Ukraine, but a majority also want a negotiated settlement. By the way, that agrees and comports with Ukrainians' own population. When polled in October, 52% said, we want a quick end to this, even if it means giving up something. And then let me round it out here. A large majority supports defending NATO allies. So there goes Dr. Brand's argument that Trump's going to take us out of the alliance. He didn't do it in the first 4 years. I doubt he's going to do it in the second. And a large majority favors continuing military aid to Israel, which will continue to, you know, confound Iran. So we see a lot of issues. I mean, I would argue that I'm not real happy with that poll. That smells to me like some interventionism that I was kind of hoping that the America First populists might want to do a little less of. So we'll have to see how it all turns out as we measure, the calendar.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's always interesting to listen to foreign nationals, because, you know, I talk to the Koreans and the Japanese and the Australians, and the perception that they have of Donald Trump is often as inaccurate as, you know, the political left in the United States. And I don't know if it's equally as willfully misrepresentative or if it's just, you know, a simple fact of different culture, therefore different perceptions. I'm not quite sure, but the reality of it is that at least for the United States, we have a very clear majority marching forward now. So the, you know, President Trump won the House, the Senate, and the presidency. He won it by a majority, you know, the number of votes never seen before.
The popular vote.
Yeah. The popular vote. It's never been seen before. And it's, you know, what's interesting is if you look at, you know, France, you know, you're going to have elections in France, Germany, the Scholz government just collapsed. You know, where else do we have chaos in, you know, we have chaos and the Stormer government is incredibly unpopular. If you go to Asia, you know, the president of Korea, has been impeached and we got to wait for the Constitutional Court to make a decision there. And so this idea that somehow the United States and its populist president is the instability as opposed to the very clear social, you know, the social democracies of Europe who, you know, they're falling like flies, but yet somehow we're the instability in the world. That's sort of, you know, I'm curious.
Let me jump in on that and then I'll let you go, Jim, but just to remind our listeners that Trump has a 55% approval rating with a domestic population. Now let's compare that to the other more enlightened European and allies that are so fearful of American instability here. The Biden administration's approval rating 37%. The Starmer approval rating in the United Kingdom right now is 27%. It's the lowest in 55 years for a UK prime minister. Macron, his approval rating is 18%. His prime minister was just replaced. Trudeau has a 26% approval rating, and there's rumors, if he's not gone already at this point, may soon be. You mentioned Scholz in Germany. He has a 19% approval rating, lost his confidence vote, which means snap elections in February. Yoon has a 15% approval rating in South Korea after his impeachment. And if you think about the majority of the nations in Europe, NATO, Spain, Turkey, Norway, Sweden, Austria, the Netherlands, Italy, Belgium, Poland, and then let's add Australia and Japan on the other side of the world, all have popularity ratings within there for their leaders at less than 50%. I would argue that if there is fear and instability in the world amongst the allies, it's not the Americans that are leading that instability and fear. It is the other nations that are having challenges domestically as they sort out their internal issues that are either overly influenced or under influenced by the external issues, specifically with Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, but Curtis, I'd say that supports exactly what I was saying earlier, is that countries and leaders will look at their self-interest. These people are trying to tear down an incoming administration in order to not look as bad or shore themselves up. So they point out the other piece instead of getting on board. And your comment about Keith Payne's article, which points this out, is when people pull together, and this is my point, people pull together and say, we want peace. My point is that every one of those points you brought out that Keith Payne said voters were for, that was not isolationism, was done so that it's in America's interest. We remain at peace. We maintain prosperity. We don't give blood and treasure for something. And in those times, everyone together, all together, build up. These other countries feel threatened. And so they, again, I use political comment. You can call what you want, Adam, but I call it these political comments that just take an extreme view of what someone's going to do or what they might do, or the outcome can be this terribly horrible, is simply a fear approach. I mean, if you truly believe that, you should come into the game with honesty and a plan to move forward that your people would be behind you. And if they're not, maybe you need to question where you are. And that's where I stay. Why I say I always like take the middle ground in politics, because you've got to see both sides. And there may be times where we should not be, we should be isolationist. don't know what those times would be. There may be times when we should be and times we're not. But right now, somebody's got to take the lead in the world before someone else takes a lead that doesn't have others' self-interest in mind. At least the United States poses, and I'm not saying we're perfect. I'm not saying we are the greatest country, but I'm not saying we're perfect. And that is that sometimes we work in our self-interest and other countries don't benefit as much. Now, not benefit as much may benefit, but not as much. I mean, that just happens. That's the reality.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Jim. I'm never going to look at both sides or be a centrist just because that's like saying, well, Jim, you really need to take into consideration the flat earth perspective. Flat earthers, you need to listen to what they have to say. The earth very well could be flat, and maybe you need to adopt some flat earth policies. But I'll never take into account socialism or communism. I'm never going to say, well, what do the communists think? Maybe they're right about things. So I'm always going to look, you know, that's,
I don't say it's a direction I'll take, but there are some positives in socialism.
Okay.
There are. Now there are some positives. I'm not saying we want to accept a socialist viewpoint, but people working together in a socialist view, in the view of a socialist mind, that's a good thing. I mean, the military is the greatest socialist experiment there is. I mean, you think about the way it's constructed. Okay. So, I mean, there are pieces of that that have value. I'm not saying we would adopt it fully. So you're a glass is all the way full, empty. That's why you can't take a middle place. And by the way, my view on flat earthers, for what it's worth. Okay. When you got to challenge me on flat earth, I will ask you, if you've ever built a house, do you pull out a ruler that is calibrated to take into the shape of the earth, or do you pull out a flat ruler? Because in most cases, you want to fight about flat earth. This brings my political comment in, is it doesn't matter if I'm a flat earther, if my world is the 15 square miles around me, who cares what I think about the earth being flat or not? But you want to use it as a bludgeon to pick on me for science, which I'd be happy to take you on with. Okay? So there you go.
You know, the great thing, the sad thing about these podcasts is, you know, we can debate for far longer than we have opportunity, because we always run out of time, as we have today as well. So, you know, I guess we'll have to, you know, these were interesting articles. They spur some interesting thoughts. You know, I think, you know, for me personally, I sort of have a tendency to agree with Keith Payne on most things, and I hold him in high regard. So, you know, I don't know if it's a straw man for us, because we already naturally have a tendency to agree with Keith, but you know, it's always good to hear what others think, and it, you know, it's sort of iron sharpening iron, which you know, we like to do. So as always, of course, thanks, Curtis. Thanks, Jim. It's always good to debate. It's great to be back to 2025. And as everybody, all of the listeners, kick off their 2025, just remember, you know, we've got some great articles in the hopper at Global Security Review. Curtis is, you know, he's doing some great article finds that he's posting and tweeting about on X. And, you know, Jim's working on a bunch of great you know, HUSC events and some other things that we're looking to do in 2025. We're working on a book on the American nuclear enterprise that we'll have it out later this year. So that's another big project. So we got lots going on at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, and we'll keep you updated. But you got to keep listening to our podcasts, because
tell your friends.
Sure.
Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors.
We're
get
on,
them in on the debate.
By the way, you can find us on Rumble and YouTube if you want to actually watch us and just see how old Jim really looks.
Yeah.
You can watch us there.
And we do. Fortunately, Rumble gives us a senior discount, so that helps.
Is that why you guys had me do the sign up? Wow.
All right. Well, thanks, Curtis and Jim. Another great show. Thanks to
happy
you,
New Year,
the listeners.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Happy New Year. And thank you, listeners, for keeping us on the books and giving us another year to talk to you.
And of course, as always, we want to remind you to always think deterrence.
Thank you for listening to the NIDS View. This show is produced under the NIDS Podcasting Network, a division of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. NIDS is a 501c3 organization dependent upon donations to provide this podcast and bring about awareness of the peacekeeping value of U.S. strength and our national deterrence. You can catch all of our podcasts or provide feedback at thinkdeterrence.com. I would like to thank our producer, Kimberly Charrington, our sponsors, and all the fantastic members of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies for making this podcast possible. Stay tuned next week for another exciting and informative The NIDS View.